Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now we continue our month of May round of interviews with the New York City Democratic primary candidates for mayor. Our theme for this round is economic recovery meets economic justice. We know that any new mayor will have to guide the comeback from COVID after so many hundreds of thousands of jobs were lost. We also know the economic devastation was not spread evenly across the board in the city, not hardly. And we know that fighting economic inequality was how Mayor de Blasio got elected more or less 8 years ago, and yet that work already had many miles yet to go even before the pandemic. So economic recovery meets economic justice. We'll also touch on a few campaign news items as we've been doing in this round, including from last week's debate. With us today on this, Ray McGuire, who left his job as vice chair of Citigroup to make this run. Mr. McGuire, thanks for coming on again. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you for having me. Hope you're well today. It's a beautiful day in New York City.
Absolutely is. In a run of beautiful days, happy to say. People who know you, I'll cite, for people who know you or don't know you, I'll cite that the bio page of your campaign says, "My journey started at the bottom." People may not know that. What people probably do know is that you made it all the way to vice chairman of Citigroup. So to the theme of our main topic this month, how does your own personal story impact your approach to economic justice in this very unequal city?
You know, Brian, it's a great question. And I would say my personal story is being raised by my single mother, who at points in time worked three jobs. And then she became a social worker. I did know my dad. And my single mother raised me and my two brothers along with my grandparents. We had a half a dozen foster siblings. And so I know what it means to struggle. And that informs why and how I will bring every New Yorker along in my comeback plan. Because I am New York. I am New Yorkers. And my struggle, the struggles that I've lived with over the course of my life, is the struggles that everyday New Yorkers live through. And that's why I am positioned to understand that.
Is it possible to say what would have been at the heart of your economic justice platform before COVID and how much the emphasis had to change to meet the changed conditions that the pandemic has forced upon us?
You know, I would say, Brian, before I left Citigroup, I wrote the foreword to what I think is one of the definitive studies on the economic impact of the systemic inequities in education, in healthcare, in the criminal justice system, and in the overall economy. And the impact that it had on the U.S. economy was $16 trillion. And if we began to address it today, that would add an additional $5 trillion to the U.S. economy. The same dynamics exist on a percentage basis in New York City. And so as we are more inclusive, the more the economy grows and the more that there is shared prosperity. What has not happened up to this point is shared prosperity.
Right. So you're saying economic growth doesn't always bring economic justice or shared prosperity, as you put it. Is that a reason ever to hold off on things that are purely growth-oriented until you brought more equity into the economy?
No, it is not a reason to hold off at all. You just have to be intentional and you have to be inclusive. And my economic comeback plan is called the greatest, most inclusive economic comeback plan, where I intend to focus on creating 500,000 jobs, and it's called Go Big, Go Small, Go Forward. Go big is infrastructure. Go small is focus on small businesses, which, as you know, are the lifeblood to the city. Half of New Yorkers work in small businesses, and where I have a plan that's outlined in my RayPamera.com plan. Going forward is to be inclusive for minority women-owned businesses. Last year, New York City spent $22.5 billion. 82% of the MWBEs got zero. And so as I think about being intentional in growth, you got to be intentional. There are examples out there where that's occurred, but what has taken place in New York City has not been intentional, and therefore it has not been inclusive. And I want to grow in my economic comeback plan. Growth is inclusive. It's at the cornerstone of my overall economic growth plan.
How would that have informed, for example, how if you were mayor, you would have handled the Amazon HQ2 plan for Long Island City, supposedly 20, 25,000 jobs, many of them high-paying tech jobs. But because they're high-paying tech jobs, they'd be concentrated in that area. The neighborhood was very concerned about gentrification and displacement and exacerbating inequality through that kind of economic growth. How would you have handled that as mayor?
So another great question. We have to look at where we are in the overall economic environment, where the stated unemployment rate, I think as of March last, is maybe 11 or so percent across New York City. In many of our boroughs, that number gets up to the high double digits, you know, 15 to 20%. And so with projects like HQ2, what that lacked was leadership. I would have been out every day talking to New Yorkers and talking about the impact of the jobs that would have created, the economic impact, the education, the schools that it would have created, the infrastructure that it would have created, and the benefits to New Yorkers and the local communities, but New York City and New York State. Had we been able to attract get a transaction, get a deal done with Amazon, I think looking at it today, the impact of that would have been enormous. More jobs created, better infrastructure, more schools, the economic empire would have been massive. And so I would have been out in the community talking to the community leaders, talking to the community boards, talking to the civic leaders, outlining the importance of bringing HQ2 here and making certain that New Yorkers were able to benefit from that workforce training. Those people who didn't have digital or technology literacy, get them trained. Let's focus on that. And the impact of that would have been enormous. So I would have been in favor of, I would have been the cheerleader for, I would have led that process, and it would have ended differently to how it ended.
But not everybody,
the impact that we've had on our New Yorkers.
But not everybody could be a software engineer. So how would you have handled the sheer pressure on housing prices, which of course were already crazy in New York, Long Island City included?
Well, the thing that you have to do, which has not been done, which is why you get so much reaction, is those people who have been in office have not been including those people who are most likely to be displaced. They've not been at the table. And what anyone who's been involved in negotiating transactions, you have to understand the people whose lives are going to be the most impacted, and you need to include them from the outset, which is not what happened. So there should not be a project that we move forward on in New York City without the local community involvement, especially those who built the community and especially those whose lives are going to be most impacted by the building that takes
right.
place.
So that's a seat at the table. But what would have the acceptable outcome been to ensure people's affordability?
Well, I would have made certain that when housing got built, that it would have been truly affordable housing. Where you have units available so that people didn't have to pay more than 30% of their income in rent. We have projects like this today. There's a great project in Bronx called the Bronx Common, where the rents go from $225 a month. The most you can pay is $1,999 a month for a three-bedroom. It includes homes for those who are formerly homeless, to those who want to be homeowners. So it can be done. It also is powered by solar fuel. It has a concert hall, there are facilities for the elderly, it has a gym. So it can be done. If
sounds
we are
like a good
about
thing.
Building.
But let me push this one more step, because that's about new construction. The concern in Long Island City was displacement of people who are currently living around there, not in rent-stabilized or rent-controlled apartments. So would it have required anything to protect them that isn't already in place?
Absolutely. Yes, that's where the disconnect occurred. It did not have dispensation for those who are in the community, who built the community, for them to stay in the community. And I would have made certain in my negotiations that we made for that allowance.
How?
Because I would have made certain that whatever items that we negotiated with HQ2 were included. That those people had places that whatever we built or whatever we converted would have included those people who would have been displaced, who couldn't have afforded whatever the latest rents would have, whatever the prevailing rents would have been.
All right.
So we could have made certain that have happened. I've been involved in enough negotiations to make certain, again, that the people whose lives are going to be the most impacted have a seat at the table, and that if they choose to stay in the community, that we would have done whatever we could to accommodate them staying in the community. They built the community. They're the lifeblood of the community. They shouldn't be displaced.
Listeners, your questions welcome here for Democratic mayoral hopeful. Democratic mayoral hopeful Ray McGuire, primarily on the topic of economic recovery meets economic justice, 646-435-7280, post-COVID economic recovery and long-term economic justice, 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. And let's take a phone call right now. It's Ben in Sunset Park. Ben, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Good morning, Brian and Ray. Thanks for taking my call. I'm having a hard time picking who to vote for mayor. And I know that in a number of past elections, we've been offered choices to vote for supposedly successful business people who were going to be excellent in government and then really didn't turn out to be so. Now, Mr. McGuire, it doesn't sound to me like you're falling quite into that category. I'm quite prepared to believe that you could be a competent person in government as opposed to business. But I think they're very different things. And one of my big concerns is that whoever is going to be mayor is going to have to address a massive climate emergency, which has been largely denied by government and which is going to overwhelm us, and which we have to be honest about.
And Ben, get to your question. I think we, you know, generally in this, the listener community here agree that climate change is real and very serious. What's your question for Mr. McGuire?
My question is, how are you going to address that, Mr. McGuire, given your history at the head of one of the major organizations that funded it?
Great question.
You should also know that we're one of the early adopters of climate change and investing in climate change. And so in my Go Big, Go Small, Go Forward economic comeback plan, at the heart of that is what we do with environment, with the climate change. And so in my plan is included making certain that places like Red Hook and Hunts Point and Coney Island, Far Rockaways, and Lower Manhattan, that we prepare for the 100-year flood that comes every 5 years. And we've talked about it up to this point. We've yet to make those investments. And part of my Go Big plan, where I create the environment for the creation of 500,000 jobs, is focused on making certain we deal with climate change. So that is the core of my plan. You're right. Others have talked about it. We've just done nothing about it. We simply don't have enough sandbags to prepare for the next Sandy that comes. So we need to be intentional about this, and my plan includes just that. So you're right to raise it. I welcome you raising it, but also recognize if you go to my plan at rayfromair.com, you will see that it's included there.
Sandbags are an adaptation for when a climate emergency occurs at the local level. What's at the heart of your plan for helping to prevent climate change or overall reduce greenhouse emissions at the level of the city?
So, you know, we have a plan for to be net zero. So I look at streetscapes and look at how many green areas that we have. I want to highlight those green areas and make them more available, especially in the boroughs where they're less available. For one, I want to make sure that we can do whatever we can to transition into as green an economy as we can when it comes to fuel emissions, making sure that we accommodate the electric part of the cycle, meaning those electric vehicles. I want to make sure that we invest in that. I want to make sure that we invest in garages for point of demand delivery services. And rather than have the vehicles, large trucks come into Manhattan during the course of the day, have them deposit those the delivery items and what I'm going to call proximity on demand services in our garages, and let's retrofit the garages to accommodate that so that you have electric vehicles that make the deliveries. So I'm doing whatever I can to focus on the climate of the future, not only climate resiliency, but a green New York City.
The caller referenced oil companies and maybe your connections with them from your Wall Street background. I read that John Hess, CEO of the Hess Corporation, has spent more than $500,000 himself to support your campaign. In the climate change era, how should our listeners think about you being funded that much by an oil company CEO?
Well, first of all, I don't know anything about what John Hess has done, so that is completely out of my control. I would interpret John Hess and others, looking at the importance of New York City and looking at the leadership of New York City. So I have no idea what John Hess has done. That's completely separate to me running my campaign.
Do you know him from before your campaign?
I do know John Hess. I do know John Hess.
And so if he's spending more than $500,000, I guess it's not a direct campaign donation. He's spending it as an independent expenditure to support your campaign, is what I gather you're saying. But you're saying you don't know anything about it, like whatever. Are you concerned? Should listeners be concerned that an oil company CEO has that much interest in you being the next mayor as opposed to somebody else?
The answer is, I think the listener should look at my track record, where I have been in the position of leadership at the highest level of scrutiny. My track record has never been questioned. I don't expect for it to ever be questioned. There's not any person, any organization that has ever influenced me to do anything other than what is guided by my North Star. My truth is my truth. I don't have to remember tomorrow what it is that I said today. And I do not owe any political favors. Matter of fact, I don't owe any favors. So I look at those people who are running for office, who are part of the political machine, who've been doing this for 100 years, and we still have yet to make any progress. And I'm not part of any of that. I'm completely independent. So whatever somebody decides to contribute on their own is for their account. I have zero knowledge about what they're doing. So I welcome all support from all New Yorkers.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio. We are talking with Democratic mayoral hopeful Ray McGuire, primarily about economic recovery from COVID and its intersection with the longer-term economic equality or economic justice questions facing the city, and taking your calls at 646-435-7280. And let's go next to Craig in the Bronx. Craig, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
How you doing? Sir,
hey, Craig,
I was a little
in the Bronx,
bit...
How you living?
How you doing? Living the dream. I was very concerned about your answer about the Amazon headquarters project. Jobs are important. However, it depends how fast they come in. Are they good for the area? We all know all those employees who came in at that area. That area could not handle the infrastructure. They were hiring employees who did not live in the area, who were specialized for Amazon, who were bringing in their own people. There were going to be separate areas for their housing, and it would have been detrimental. It would have been a spark of gentrification in two totally different ways, and I think it would have been a detriment. Jobs are wonderful, but you have to do it at the right pace and keep it local and help maybe educate the local people to promote it so that you don't have to grow areas by automatically going to gentrification. You can still do that without pushing out local businesses. And I think that everyone like you have very altruistic ideas, but I don't know if they really know how to handle it as it moves along.
Craig, I'm going to leave it there and get
your
response.
I don't think you guys know how to handle it.
Mr. McGuire, go ahead.
Hey, Craig. Craig, I completely agree with you, which is why I said I would go into the community and talk to those people whose lives would have been most impacted and make sure they were included. So you and I are on the same. We don't disagree. We completely agree. Part of the negotiation would have been, had I been there negotiating, Craig, and I've negotiated a lot of transactions, would have been made certain that those local New Yorkers would be included. I would not have allowed anything other than that. So you and I are saying the same thing. I'm quite sensitive to the impact it has on our communities, and quite sensitive, having lived in communities like this, quite sensitive to make certain that what you've outlined, the gentrification, would not have occurred, and that the New Yorkers who lived there would have been able to stay there, and that local New Yorkers would have had jobs. That would have been part of my negotiation. So you're right to point it out, and I agree with you.
Let me ask you a follow-up question about housing, I guess it's fair to say that you and candidate Sean Donovan got somewhat embarrassed last week when the New York Times released transcripts of your editorial board interviews. And on the question of what is the median selling price for a home in Brooklyn, you said it's got to be somewhere in the $80,000 or $90,000 range. Reading that quote, it's like $80,000, $80,000, $90,000. It's got to be that. That's a lot. But the real answer was $900,000. So my question about that is, maybe voters don't mind that a candidate is personally wealthy, but if you're wealthy and out of touch with conditions for people of ordinary means, like the cost of buying a home, then does it become a problem?
So the answer is, I know the home values in Brooklyn. I misstated what I knew. And listen, I recently advised someone on my campaign team on the home buying process. And we talked about how it'll be tougher to find something under $1 million in Brooklyn. Thankfully, she found a home under $1 million and within her budget in East New York for around $600,000. We need, as I did then, educate first-time home buyers on the process. We went through, who is your lender? Are you saving separately for closing costs? So the answer is, I do know the costs, having actually recently just gone through this. That instance was one where I, had a brain freeze.
Brain freeze, like you knew, you forgot, or you meant to say 900 and you said 90?
I that's exactly right. I meant to say 900, 8 to 900,000 as opposed to 80 to 90,000 because I know the facts. I've just recently gone this in real life with one of the members of our campaign. So, yes, I know the facts. I've lived the facts. And I have, I've managed through that and helped guide through, actually advise someone on how to get this done.
Let's take a call from George in Manhattan who has a question about the city budget. George, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning. One of the critical, hang on a second, I'll get off the speakerphone. One of the critical issues that I think the most critical issue, far surpassing all the rest for any candidate to discuss, is that of money going forward. The state and the city have gotten billions and billions of dollars from the federal government this year. So all the budgetary shortfalls have been dealt with for this time. It's not coming next year, certainly not in any way that's going to have any kind of numbers similar to what we've had. So we see major shortfalls for both the state and the city in its budgets just going forward now without making any adjustments. Furthermore, we're probably going to see a reduction in the amount of sales taxes and also property taxes, which are the two mainstays of our city's finances.
And, George, I'm going to leave it there for time. And certainly, Mr. McGuire, many people have said, well, we're getting all this federal relief money, and that prevented layoffs and a lot of service cuts that could have been a doomsday scenario, Mayor de Blasio had warned. But that money's not going to keep coming year after year. How do you compensate?
First of all, I completely agree with what you said, and I've been clear about the how ineptly this budget has been managed. We will get dollars from the federal government. It'll be the first time. And depending upon how we use it, if you use it the way it's been outlined, then in fiscal years 23, 24, and 25, we will yet incur another $4 billion budget deficit. And I am a person who's having managed through budget deficits from the depth of the financial crisis, and I've had to manage those budgets and be held accountable. I know how to do this. And the fact that I've been held accountable and stayed in my position longer than anybody else in the history of corporate America means I've been held to the highest level of scrutiny. And as I look at this budget, unless we manage it right, what you've just outlined is completely correct. In addition to that, we're adding 5,500 people to the payroll. And we've just inflated the budget without a way to pay for it. This is the same kind of mismanagement that led us to the crisis that we had in the 70s, where business, labor, and government had to come together. We need a leader, somebody who's got the experience that I have, who has been held accountable. I've had both. I got the experience, and I've been held accountable, more accountable than anybody else. I've managed over 50 budgets. And those budgets are, I had to be responsible for $20 billion worth of revenue. And the last transaction I negotiated was over $100 billion. So I'm quite comfortable with budgets of this size and quite comfortable with the ability to surround myself with leaders and managers who understand how to manage budgets like this, in addition to me having that expertise, which I've generated over the past four decades. I know how to manage this budget. The only way out of this is to grow our way out of this, which is my most inclusive economic comeback plan.
We're almost out of time. I want to give you a chance to say anything you want as we wrap up, but let me frame a sort of ideological field question. A lot of the coverage in the media kind of describes lanes of candidates from left to right, and, you know, competence management lanes and things like that. And you're running in a generally more progressive field, I think it's fair to say, than de Blasio did 8 years ago when he first got elected. And you're not usually named as in the most progressive lane. So how do you distinguish yourself on economic justice policy, if at all, from some of the others who do get mentioned in that lane, Diane Morales, Maya Wiley, Scott Stringer? Is being more moderate or whatever adjective than somebody else something you would embrace as a label?
You know, I discard the labels. I can tell you, when it comes to the notion of progressive, I've been progressive all my life. When I came to Wall Street, when I came to the corporate world, there were one or two people who looked like me. I had to progress through conscious and unconscious bias. I had to climb the ladder, and in so doing, I've also extended the ladder to thousands of other people. I've created more opportunity and more economic wealth than all the other candidates combined. And so when it comes to progressive, whatever label you want to have, I've been progressive, and none of those people have ever walked in my shoes. So I would say that. And for two, I am for what's in the best interest of New Yorkers. I do not owe any political favors. I'm not part of the machine. I haven't been termed out. I'm not looking for a promotion. And my sole focus is on what's in the best interest of the city that I love and the people I love. And as my 95-year-old mother says, sometimes you do things for the people and the places that you love, which is why I decided to run for the mayor of New York City. New Yorkers want to change. Status quo has and continues to fail them.
Should I take that as your closing argument, or do you want to use our last 30 seconds to add anything else?
Listen, New Yorkers want a mayor for the comeback who's going to pursue economic recovery relentlessly. They want a mayor who's going to restore safety in the streets and subways and finally get our kids educated. And New Yorkers now know that I grew up with very little. I broke down barriers in business. I know how to turn the city's economy around. And as a political outsider, I'll make decisions solely in the merits. I do not owe any political favors. Zero. Bupkis. New Yorkers need a mayor who's a doer, not a talker. So when the ballot's going to look different this year, and I would ask them for their first place votes. I'm four down on the ballot. I want the first place votes, and I'm here to represent New Yorkers in a way they haven't been represented in a long time, if ever. Which means they're my sole focus is going to be what's in there in our best interest. So I look forward. Thank you for having me. Thank you for your leadership here, Brian. And thank you to your listeners. I look forward to having your votes, and go to rayformayor.com.
And thank you for being so accessible throughout this campaign. I really appreciate our conversations. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, where it's time now. Oh, and by the way, we'll have another mayoral hopeful in this round focused on economic recovery meeting economic justice. It'll be candidate Diane Morales on Wednesday.